We know her as Wonder Woman. Of course, if you read the comics, you also know her as Diana Prince. But you also know that's a play on words, because really who she is Princess Diana, the daughter of the Queen of Themyscira. And having a mom that's a queen must be a very difficult life. But being a mom that's a queen must also be a difficult life. Because as moms, sometimes you have to make hard decisions. And as moms, sometimes you have to be willing to let things go, including your kids. The clip that I just showed you is actually from a movie. And the movie, actually in that scene where she is exiled from the island, it wasn't just because she broke the law. It was because mom realized the only way she could ever be the hero that she was meant to be was to let her go to the world and not require her to keep coming back to the island. The island and the world. That would make a good sermon series, wouldn't it? Oh, wait a minute. We've already done that. Sometimes being a mom means you have to make some sacrifices. And that gets hard. Now, before somebody thinks I forgot today is Mother's Day and I'm not going to recognize moms, no, I'm just saving that moment because I thought it would be very much more appropriate if we do so as part of the sermon. Would you, mom, if you're here today and you're a mom, would you please stand? I'd like to have a word of prayer for you for just a moment. Dear God, as we take another look at a mom this morning and we turn your pages of your word, Lord, we just want to be reminded again of the ladies in our life that make sacrifices, God. Sometimes very quietly behind the scenes. Sometimes it goes totally unnoticed until years later. But Lord, I would like to thank you for the women and the ladies that you put into our life that are willing to be mothers and take on this very, very, very hard task. We pray all this in your name. Amen. Let's give our moms a hand. And you may be seated. So last week I gave you a tease, and I told you this week's sermon was going to be about this lady named Jochebed. And most of you looked at me and said, who? It's not a name that you hear a lot, but she's very important. So when I sent out the email this week, kind of summarizing last week's sermon and giving you the head start on this week's sermon, I put the name out there in writing and let you even know this is the NIV translation of it. And I challenged you to see if you can find it. And you know, this wasn't as challenging as it used to be. You know, when I was a kid, you know, back in the day, if somebody had issued that challenge, the only way that I could have met that challenge was to pick up a book and turn page after page after page of just looking for this name. Today, that challenge probably took you about 2 minutes. Just go to BibleGateway.com, type in Jochebed and all the scriptures. Oh, you could have just went to Google and said, who is Jochebed? And it would have told you exactly who she is. And so hopefully you took a few moments today to go this week to take a look at who this lady is. But if you think you don't know her, you do know her. You're just not as familiar with her, but you're more familiar with her kids. So who is she? Well, here's who she is. Numbers chapter 26, verse 59. The name of Amoran's wife, by the way, don't get too hung up on his name, because last time you'll hear his name, anyway. The name of Amoran's wife was Jochebed, a descendant of Levi, who was born to the Levites in Egypt. So this is when they were in slavery. To Amoran, she bore Aaron, Moses, and their sister Miriam. You see, we don't usually know good old Jochebed by her name, but man, we sure do know her kids, don't we? I mean, now she's mentioned last in the list, but I think Miriam was actually the oldest, and Miriam, well, in her own right, Miriam had her place in Jewish leadership. In Exodus chapter 15, verse 20, then Miriam the prophet, oh wow, Aaron's sister, took a trimble in her hand, and all the other women followed her with trembles in their, and with trembles and dancing. And so Miriam is identified as a prophet. So the sister of the group had her own ministry, and you realize a prophet, we'll talk a little bit about this next week when we talk about another lady that was a prophet. There's your tease for next week. You can go hunt that one down yourself too. We're going to talk about another lady that was a prophet. But usually when we say the word prophet, we usually associate that with a guy. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Zechariah, Malachi, you know, Daniel, the Jonah. Those are the prophets. But You do understand that this prophet, which was actually one of the first prophets of Israel, is female. And so this was one of the kids, but it gets better. Because not only did she have Miriam, she also had this guy named Aaron. And so this is what it tells us about Aaron. It says, tell all the skilled workers to whom I have been given wisdom in such matters, and they are to make garments for Aaron for his consecration, so he may serve me as priest. So now we're going to get Aaron, and Aaron is actually the first high priest of Israel. So you talk about a dynamic duo that Jochebed gave birth to. First she has one of the first prophets of Israel, and now she has the first high priest of Israel. You would think, man, she's batting 1,000, but her mind gets a little bit better. Because not only does she have Miriam, not only does she have Aaron, she has this third kid. By the way, I just want to let y'all know, the third kids are always the best ones. Said from somebody that's the third kid. And when the third kid's the guy, thumbs up, really, truly. So she had this third kid, and his name is Moses. In case you forgot your Bible trading cards this morning, let me just give you the highlight of this man's career. He's the great deliverer. You know, let my people go. He's the guy that went down to Pharaoh and basically told Pharaoh to let him go. And he brought the plagues of Egypt in there. And he's the one that brought all of the Israelites out. He is the one that God chose to go and deliver Israel. That's impressive. He physically talked to God. Now, we're doing an emphasis on prayer this year. And we've done some prayer events. And we've done one prayer sermon series. And we're going to do another prayer sermon series. But you do know that Moses just didn't pray to God. He physically talked to God, which means the Bible tells us God talked back. He heard God's voice. I have never had that experience. And again, I tell you all the time, I hope to never have that experience until I get to heaven. Then we can talk. But I've never had God physically talk to me. But this guy had physical conversations with God. Man, that's impressive. It gets better. We know this one, right? This is the guy that parted the Red Sea. This is the guy that when he led Israel out of Egypt and they got to a certain point and they got there and the sea was in front of them and there was a mountain to the left and a mountain to the right and the Egyptians coming up behind them and there was nowhere to go and all the nation was in a panic. Moses said, calm down, I've got a solution. And the Red Sea parted. And Israel walked over on dry land. And the really thing we seemingly forget about this story is that then when the Egyptians tried to cross over on that same dry land, Moses drowned them all. Man, this is a powerful guy. And he's the third kid. See how good third kids are? So third time's a charm, I think, is what we should say here. He's the recipient of the Ten Commandments. This is the man that went up on the mountain, wandered around up on the mountain, and watched God with his own finger carve those stones. This is the man that brought those tablets back down and brought God's law to humanity, 10 simple commands. He got to see God, even if it was just from the backside. So not only did he actually talk to God, he got a glimpse of God. I mean, I'm not just talking metaphorically. He literally got a glimpse of God. When God gave him a request, he said, hey, Moses, for all of your years of service, I'm going to give you, I guess, a service award. What would you like? And Moses said, hey, I'd like to see you. And he said, well, I can't let you see my face because anybody that looks on the face of God dies. But I tell you what I do. I'm going to hide you in the cleft of a rock and I'm going to put my hand over the entrance. And when I pass by, after I pass by, I'm going to remove my hand and let you see the afterglow, the backside of God. This is an important guy. And if all of that isn't important enough for you, he is also the author of the first five books of the Old Testament. So those that thing we call the Torah, you know, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, all have the same author. That was Moses. As a matter of fact, we even gave it a nickname. It's called the Law of Moses. So this was an important man. And so when we talk about this woman named Jochebed, she kind of slammed the home run, didn't she? Talk about a retirement plan for kids. Man, she got a prophet, a priest, and I guess the ultimate superhero that ever came into Israel, the great deliverer Moses. She's pretty important. But if you remember, this sermon series isn't about telling the stories that we usually tell all around these women. Remember when we looked at Eve, we didn't talk about Adam. We talked about what was Eve's story. When we looked at Hagar, we didn't go look at the story of Abraham and Sarah. We really wanted to understand Hagar's story. So when we come to Jochebed, we don't want to understand her kid's story. We want to know her story, because her story is important. And her story is actually found in Exodus chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. And so that's Genesis, Exodus. That would be the second book of the Law of Moses. And we're going to be in chapter 2, so you don't have to go very far into it. If you'd like to follow along, you can pull the Bible right out of the front of the pew rack and stick with us here. But before we can actually begin in chapter 2, we do have to back the story up a little bit, because we got to set the stage. I mean, every good hero has to have a backstory. And this is the backstory for Jochebed. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, so that would be Pharaoh, whose names were Shiphrah and Puah, I didn't name them, when you are helping the Hebrew women during childbirth on the delivery stool, if you see the baby as a boy, kill him. But if it's a girl, let her live. The midwives, however, feared God and did not do what the king of Egypt had told them to do. They let the boys live. Then the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and asked them, "Why have you done this? Why have you let the boys live?" The midwife answered Pharaoh, "Hebrew women are not like Egyptian women. They are vigorous and give birth before the midwives arrive." So God was kind to the midwives, and the people increased and became even more numerous. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them families of their own. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people. Every Hebrew boy that is born, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. So, recap of the story here. The Hebrew people are now, they are slaves down in Egypt. Now, maybe there's like some poetic justice, because if you remember all the way back last week when we were with Hagar, she was a slave of Abraham. Do you remember where she was from? Egypt. Kind of part of that promise that God gave her, that he was going to make her of many nations. Well, to do that, he had to take the nation and put it in exile for a while Ishmael's family began to increase across that land. And guess where he put them? They became slaves to Egypt. Kind of what goes around comes around. But as they are down there, they are actually growing in numbers, and God is blessing them. And eventually Pharaoh begins to look out, and he was worried because there are too many Israelites down here. They're beginning to outnumber us. I mean, they're producing more kids than us. Eventually, there's going to be more of them. This isn't going to be Egypt. This is going to be their territory. So Pharaoh comes up with an idea. He decided to kill all the newborn boys. Now, again, this is biblical time. The girls would not have been perceived as a threat, because they would have said, "Hey, look, they're just girls. They don't get it. Girls have a lot more value than they thought." But they tried to say, "You know what? We know how to stop the line of the Israelites. We'll just kill off all the boys. Because if you kill off all the boys, then they can't produce more in the future. And the women will become subject to us. And so it'll solve our problem." So this is the situation that Jochebed finds herself in. And she gets pregnant with child number 3. And she makes some decisions in Exodus chapter 2, verses 1 through 6. This is where we're going to pick up our story. "Now a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman." Man, didn't even mention their names here. I would have thought they could have at least said what mom and dad names were. Well, their names were not as important as who they were. "And she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months." 3 months. Can you imagine what it's like to try to keep a baby a secret for 3 months? That would be impressive. "For 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with pitch. And then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister stood," there's Miriam, "at a distance to see what would happen to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slave to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. 'This is one of the Hebrew babies,' she said. So let's talk a little bit about Jochebed's story here, because again, she had a baby, and at first she doesn't want the baby to get killed, and so she decides, I'm going to hide the baby. It's kind of, thank you, Martin, very good object lesson here. Babies aren't hard to are easy to hide. I mean, you can't tell the baby when it's time to cry or when it's time to eat. They decide they want what they want when they want it. And so for 3 months, she's playing this giant hide the baby game to try to keep everybody from finding it so she can keep her child. But this is a very brave move, because if they found the child, they're not going to just kill Moses. You do understand she disobeyed Pharaoh's order, and Pharaoh has absolute power. She's risking her own life to save the life of her child. That's a mother. That's what moms do. They make these hard decisions that they're going to put their life ahead of they're going to put their child's life ahead of their own life. But once she could no longer hide him, I mean, the babies don't stay small. It'd be kind of cool sometimes, wouldn't it? I mean, babies are kind of cute, but they don't stay small forever. Eventually they get a little bigger and a little bigger, and eventually they become teenagers, and eventually they're all grown up. And so there came a point at which she could no longer hide her son. And so she comes up with a bold plan. Now, I want you to appreciate this plan, because there's a lot of things that could have gone wrong. Okay? She put Moses in the basket and put him on the Nile. Now, you do know the Nile has these creatures, big jaws. They're called crocodiles. And this would be like crocodile snack. So he could have never made it very far as she floated him out. I'm sure she looked both ways to make sure she saw it, but these things can kind of go below the ground, I mean below the water. She may have never saw it coming, but she took a risk. She put him out there even though there was a risk to his life. He could have floated over to the Egyptian woman, and she could have not accepted him. She could have looked at him and said, well, here's one of them smelly Hebrew boys, and they're all supposed to be dead anyway. And she could have executed him right then and there. And no harm, no foul. Matter of fact, she might have been given an award. So she was taking a risk that God was going to work on this lady's heart, and that there would be room for him. And by the way, I'd like to take a moment. We're talking about moms. Here's a shout out to all of the moms who have adopted. Just so you know, here is the Bible's first mother that did an adoption. She adopted Moses. She treated him like her own son. He was considered a prince of Egypt at one point. And so the important thing is we actually have two moms here that are working together. One that's going to have to give up, and one that's going to have to accept something new. She was taking a risk because she was turning him over to the Egyptians, who had completely different religious practices, worshiped different gods. Moses was going to grow up in a house where he was going to learn all these other gods' names, and she was taking a risk. What if he never found Jehovah? What if he never came back? What if at some point his heart decided to follow the other gods and not the God that they serve? And you know what? That's just what moms have to do sometimes. Being a mom is never an easy thing. See, being moms means that you have to let go. But it's not easy. It's not. I mean, when they're really small and they hang around and they're tied to your skirt or your apron strings or your pants leg, and it seems everywhere you go they are, and as they grow and they begin to move out and they begin to move up and they try to experience new things, moms have a much more difficult time letting go. But this woman, she had to make a choice. Because if she kept him to herself, he was going to die. She had to make a choice. I'm willing to let you go so that you can live. I'm willing to let you go so that you can become all that you can be. God, put him in your hands. He's yours. And here's the cool thing. A lot of times it doesn't work out this way. You don't get your reward, mom, for years later. You know that day when your kids come back and tell you how smart you were when they're about 40 or 50 years old? Because they're never going to tell you when they're 15 or 16. If you're waiting, don't. Okay, but someday when they're older, the older they get, the smarter you look. Just so you know that. It does work that way. But she kind of got an instantaneous reward from her faith. This is what it says in verses 2, 7 through 9. Then his sister, so this is Miriam coming in, asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" Now remember, there were a lot of Hebrew women out there that had given birth and their sons had been put to death, and so they were capable of nursing children. But Miriam steps in, what a brave little girl. She's like, "I have a plan. I can help mom out. Best Mother's Day present she'll ever get." She stepped in and she said, "Hey, this baby's going to need milk. And while we're really great, thankful that you can't produce milk, how about I go find a Hebrew woman that doesn't have her son anymore and let her nurse him?" And so not only was the baby saved because the Egyptian woman took him, not only was she going to get the chance to raise her son, because this is what it says, "Yes, go," she answered. So the girl went to the baby's mother. So Miriam goes back to mom. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you." So the woman took the baby and nursed him. So she got to raise her son just like she had always wanted to do. And here's the cool thing. She got paid to be mom. The woman said, "I'm going to pay you to nurse the baby. I'm going to pay you to do that thing that you were doing in hiding, that thing that you were struggling with. Now you're going to be able to do it under the blessing of Pharaoh's daughter, and your family is going to get paid for it." Man, don't you wish moms had worked that way? You can make a hard decision immediately. You get to reap some of the benefits. Well, give it time. The benefits are out there. But I do want you to see that God rewarded her faithfulness. I mean, God could have let it play out this way. He could have let the Egyptian woman just take the baby out the water and go on up to the castle and she never saw her again. And she probably would have still felt good about her decision because the child would have lived. But God chose to say, "You know what? Because of your faith, Jochebed, because of the fact that you were willing to put your child in my hands, I'm going to reward not only him for it, I'm going to reward you for it." Because if you think about it, had she not done this, this also built for Aaron and Miriam later on into the roles that they would become. So she's becoming a testimony about how important God is to the kids that are in front of Moses. This is an important lady. You take her out of the timeline and this whole thing falls apart. This was the decision that changed everything. And it was made by a mom that just had to let her son go. And that's hard. And you know, doing it once is one thing, but here's the sad thing. She had to do it again. In Exodus chapter 2, verse 10, it says, "When the child grew older," so she gets to keep him for a while, but it gets to a point he no longer needs to be nursed, the time for him to go to his adoptive family, "she took him to Pharaoh's daughter and said," and he became her son. Ouch. You think this is probably harder than the basket. I mean, putting the baby in the basket is one thing, but now you've got this child that you've been nursing and he's grown and you know, you've been with him and now you have to take him and now she has to give him away again. And this isn't a temporary thing. She's giving him and he's going to get a new name. He's going to get a new family. And I'm sure Jochebed's heart was breaking because she's kind of like, "You know what? God, this isn't fair. God, this isn't right." But she did it anyway. She decided 'twas better to give Moses over. And so it doesn't matter what name she had already given him. You notice Pharaoh's daughter didn't look at her and say, "So what would you like to name him?" No. She named him Moses. The name Moses came from Pharaoh's daughter, saying, "I drew him out of the water," which is what Moses meant. So now we've got Moses in a new family, and he's going to grow up, and he's going to become an adult, and he's going to go through all those teenage years of, you know, driving the chariot when he's not supposed to, and, you know, going places he's not supposed to do, and trying things that, and Jochebed has to watch from a distance. Watch her son grow up. How hard must that have been for this woman to keep her silence to say, "Well, I'm the real mom. how hard it must have been all of those years, every time he fell and he got a scraped knee, to say, I've got to step back. I've got to let the person who I gave him to take care of this. But you do understand, she didn't give him to Pharaoh's daughter. She gave him to God. The moment she put him in that basket, she was giving up control, saying, God, this is in your hands. And now she's watching as she has to let go. And you would think that's enough heartbreak for any one woman. Oh, no. And again, eventually she's going to have to let Moses go all over again. Here's her story. Exodus chapter 2, verses 11 through 15. One day, after Moses had grown up, so we had gone through years and how he's a grown man making his own decisions, he went out to where his own people were. Now, catch that. Don't let that pass by. Moses has come to the realization, I'm not Egyptian. His heart is turning back toward God. You think God didn't play a role in this? And so, one day, the people where he watched them and their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Looking this way and that, seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. The next day he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting, and he asked the one in the wrong, why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew? The man who made you ruler and judge over us, the man said. Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian? So Moses thought he had done this in secret, but now the secret's out. And then guess what happens? Then Moses was afraid and thought, what I did must have become known. When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses. How would you like to be that mom? Your son's now on Pharaoh's most wanted list. Yes, he killed somebody, but he did kill somebody in defense of another person. Would that not make you want to run to Pharaoh and say, you know what, you've got the wrong idea. He didn't actually murder like you're thinking. He isn't a cold-blooded killer. You think she wanted to stick up for him? But once again, what did Jochebed have to do? Sit in the back, watch what's going on, and just watch the events play out. And as she watched the events play out, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. After the accusations came out, Jochebed had to watch her son leave for good. Well, he came back 40 years later, a new man with a new mission. But she missed his wedding. He got married down in Midian. Didn't actually get the help in the picking out of the bride, which was a big deal in the Hebrew culture. She didn't actually get to be present for the moment he finally got his head on straight and came to God. God didn't let her see the burning bush. That was just Moses. She missed out on so many life events. And you just think, that is so unfair for this mom. But the mother's here, sitting here, saying, you know what? If it meant my son's life, I get it. Because you see, Jochebed saw it, and instead of seeing it as letting go, she just saw it as letting God. You see, when you're willing to turn your kids back over to God, then you know what? You're putting trust in the person who made them and gave them to you. Coming to the understanding that our children are just rental property, at least to us. I only get them for a little while. I don't own them. Okay, I pay enough for them. I think I should get some kind of ownership, but I don't. They're God's. And the faster we learn that, and the more able we are to turn them back over to God, the better things get, not only for them, but for us. Because now God's going to be involved in their life. But you know, that works in other places besides being a mother. It works in your life. You don't own your life. You don't. Jesus paid for it on the cross, and the faster you're willing to turn that back over to God, the better things get for you. See, this goes in every aspect of our life, and this is a testimony that we can get from Jochebed. The ability to let God do what God needs to do. Even when it hurts. Even when it means that you have to make a sacrifice. Because this woman, Jochebed, follow the story. The sacrificial mom made way for the sacrificial lamb, because you know the story of Moses, right? Moses goes out, he sees the burning bush, God calls him to go back to Pharaoh, he goes back down to Pharaoh, let my people go, the plagues, all the things I told you about. Eventually, he leads them out of Egypt, and he takes them over to the promised land. Eventually, they conquer the promised land. Eventually, they take control of Israel, and eventually, they come along around a few thousands and thousands of years later. We come along with Mary and Joseph, who give birth to Jesus, who becomes the sacrifice for all of our sins. You see how important her decision was? Take her out of the equation. It doesn't work. And you might say, God would have found somebody else. But he called her. And as a mom, she took the challenge. So let me ask you something today. Are you willing to make the sacrifices needed that it has a relationship with God? Are you willing? You do realize that's going to mean that maybe you have to tie up parts of your life and put it in the basket instead of the float and just let God have it. And just let God do with what he wants. See, that's the idea of surrender and sacrifice, is allowing God to turn, allow yourself to turn things back over to who God is.